Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Story time.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
My buddy was camping in Northern Ontario about a decade ago. It was him and one other guy. Everything was going great. They caught a bunch of fish and fried some up for dinner. They hung up the rest of the catch in the trees for the evening. The sun was down and they were relaxing. As they sat by the fire, they heard sounds coming from the bush. There were normal animal sounds, leaves crunching, twigs snapping. Easily a squirrel or raccoon. But there were also strange laughing sounds. My buddy looks in his periphery and sees what he describes as a little Spider-Man. His camping partner sees the same thing, a little, human-like figure. Like a hunched dwarf. They get spooked and run a few meters from camp. When they return, all the fish is gone from the trees. In only a matter of a few minutes. This, by itself, is not that scary. It could have been raccoon, porcupine, whatever. The eyes play tricks, and my buddy is a scientist, so he is not easily swayed by extraordinary explanations. Fast forward to me in the Ontario archives doing research for my dissertation. I came across an interview with early 20th century explorer Ernest Oberholzer. He recounts stories from his indigenous travel companion and guide Atuk Kaumauan Tatapaswerbeton or Billy McGee, who said the Anishinaabeg people north of Lake Superior spoke of Mishifisu or Mama Grey Sea, which were little people or dwarves who made strange sounds and played tricks on people. Same area my buddy was camping, similar descriptions. I immediately messaged my buddy. If anything, a fun story, but creepy if we let our imaginations run wild. My boyfriend and I went camping with two other couples. I took them to a favorite spot of mine about 3 hours out of town, and definitely deep into the forest. I had been going to it for years with my family, but our friends were more used to by the lake camping and are more city folk. I know the kind of people who are out there, like off-grid hippies and mostly tweakers. There's a known rumor of the meth labs out there, and I know to keep my mouth shut. Our friends, however, did not. So anyway, we had just eaten dinner, and we were all sitting by the campfire drinking when we suddenly heard someone yelling Marcus very loudly. It was a woman's voice, and she was obviously in distress, but the thing was, she was coming from the east, which is the opposite direction anyone would be coming from, except for those tweakers. I instantly fell silent, not wanting to draw attention to our little group, but one of our friends yelled back, "Poyo," thinking the woman had yelled Marco and thought it would be funny. Well, the woman heard our friend and proceeded to yell through the very dark night, asking us how to get to our camp. I told everyone to be quiet, hoping she would move along, but that's when she saw the fire. She continued to yell obscenities as she made her way towards us. At one point, she clearly fell down the hill we were below because we could hear a crash and some wood crackle, which she also blamed on us because we were shining a very bright light at her and she couldn't see. The only light out there was the fire, and we still couldn't see her because of it. She was definitely tripping balls, which made me more anxious because you never know what someone like that will do. So after about 10 minutes of her trampling through the forest and falling down a few times, she finally started to walk into view. This was when the rest of my friends had that oh shit moment. She was clearly a meth head and in very bad shape, and she wanted to stay to eat and sleep in our camp. She insisted to the point of plopping her ass down on the ground next to us and refusing to leave. She had never once asked us to help her or if she could even come into our camp, and she was very rude. I would have been happy to help her, but she was high and very twitchy and pretty much demanded things from us that we weren't going to give. So my boyfriend, a very bulky and quite scary dude when you make him mad, finally stood up, grabbed her a water bottle, and told her she had to leave, and now. She whined some more in a very childish manner and yelled at us that we weren't God's children. But he forced her to get up, and she turned towards the way she came. She continued to yell into the night about how rude and unkind we were, nicer equivalents to what she said. At one point, she dropped the water bottle we gave her, and she blamed us for that too. We could slowly hear her yelling becoming farther and farther away. But what scared me the most was her coming back later. She already knew where we were. Let's just say none of us slept that night. And I hope to God my friends learned their lessons. You don't mess around in the forests. There are people out there that know it better than you. That's not the first time I've come into contact with unwanted people. Took the wife and two dogs camping with me one time in North Georgia. After a full day of driving, setting up and drinking that night if was bedtime. Sometime in the middle of the night something was really close to my side of the tent pressing up against it. I woke up to it hitting my head but my dogs never alerted, which was strange because one being a Basset always alerts when a rabbit or something is the yard and the other was a Heinz's 57 puppy who was always curious. I froze as I could what looked like a man's hand pressing on the wall coming right down on my head. Not knowing what to do and not really wanting to use the Glock, I pressed back, and as soon as I did, whatever it was took off. I lay there panicked for a while, thinking it was a bear looking for some food or a creeper from the next clearing over. When the sun came up, I crawled out to find nothing had been touched and couldn't find any tracks where they would have been at my side of the tent. Didn't tell my wife about it for a few days after the trip was over. That was my only bad experience so far from camping, and I've been a great number of times up in those hills. A few summers ago, me and a few buddies went catfishing at a local reservoir. This is rural Ohio, and the reservoir was off a dirt road about 2 miles from the village it fed, which was a village of about 1,500 people. We had fished this spot tons of times, and we very rarely saw other people during the day, and we never saw anyone out there at night. So the day we went out, it was about 9 p.m., sun's going down, we had a couple cases of beer, we were planning on staying out until the sun came back up. We didn't want to be bothered, we weren't really allowed to have alcohol around the reservoir anyway, so we actually drove a dirt service road clear around the reservoir as far away as we could get from the road in. This service road was nothing but compacted dirt, with tree roots running across it, areas that had washed away during flooding, fallen trees in the road that had been there for years, etc. This was not a well-traveled road, and the only way we got around it was that we all had lifted 4x4 trucks or jeeps. The site we pick is out on a piece of land that stretches out into the water a bit in a teardrop kind of shape, goes maybe 20 feet out into the reservoir. So we have water on all sides of us besides our back. We figure we can fish from different directions, since we will have 5 or 6 poles in the water, it would give us a little more room to cast without tangling lines. Plus, there was remnants of a fire pit, and some wood that was already collected. So we get start a fire, bait our poles and start drinking. We fish for 2 or 3 hours and get good and drunk. In the meantime, a thick summer fog creeps in across the pond. Then, we hear a huge curse sploosh and we see the ripples coming from across the water to our right. There is maybe 50 yards of water between us and the other bank, and the fog was so thick we could not see the bank or what caused the sound, but we could see the ripples in the water once they got to us. We explain it away to a tree limb falling in the water, or maybe a beaver jumping off the bank. Do beavers jump? And we keep fishing. About 20 minutes later, another huge kersploosh. And the ripples come again. And let me tell you, there was no mistaking the sound. It was not a fish flopping, and it was not a frog jumping in the water, it was the sound of a large heavy object. Like, the sound someone makes when they do a cannonball off the diving board. But, we explain it away as we did with the first. Shortly after that, we run out of wood for the fire. So we leave one guy to watch the poles, me and a few buddies go out into the brush to find fallen sticks and whatnot. We all go our separate ways, and meet back at the fire shortly after. One of my buddies comes back to the fire with a white jacket, a pair of rubber boots, and a clown mask in his arms. This was about the time when there were all the posts about the scary clowns who would lurk around towns to scare people. I knew those stories were bullshit, so I figured it was just left over from dumbass kids who had a party out there one night and left it. So we get the fire going again, we fish for a little while longer, when we hear twigs breaking in the woods across the water and then another huge kersploosh. At this point, we know there is someone out there with us, and the sound has to be someone dropping something in the water. So we call out, like, hey, if there is someone out there, we aren't making trouble, just fishing and drinking some beers. We'd be happy to have you join us. Dead silence. So we call out again and again, to no response. A couple of my buddies are seriously freaking out at this point between the booze, the clown mask, the fog and the mystery noises. So I get that drunk courage. You know the kind, and I decide we should all go walk around the bend and see just what the FS going on. This guy's being AA. Hole and trying to scare us. I convinced 2 of my buddies to come with me, and the other 2 guys watched the poles. So we 3 trek into the brush with our flashlights, make our way through the thick-ass fog, start working around this lake, and as we go, we start finding bits of trash, and saplings that had been cut down, and then more trash, and then footprints, of someone in their bare feet. Which is odd, since it was so much work to get back to this spot on the lake. No one would be hiking around this far around the lake to fish in this spot. As I'm sweeping the woods with my flashlight, I walk over the crest of a hill, and not 10 feet in front of my face is a tent. This tent had been here for a long time. There was moss growing on the sides of it, and there was trash and shit thrown all around this campsite. Most concerning though, was the pile of propane tanks. There had to have been 15 or 20 of those 5-gallon propane tanks. So, we all looked at each other, and I said, "Vailp, I guess this is none of my business." And we hurriedly made our way back to the fire, threw all of our shit in the back of the trucks and made our way out of there in a hurry. On the way out from around the reservoir, we pull onto the main, still dirt, road and pass a shitty little Toyota Camry with 5 dude in it. Watching in the rear view, they pull onto the service road we just left out of. So, for those that aren't savvy to rural southern Ohio, we busted a meth lab in the middle of the woods. The owner of said meth lab tried to scare us away by throwing shit in the lake. I can only assume that when throwing shit in the lake didn't scare us away, the meth cook called some of his buddies to scare us out, or worse yet, the meth cook called his buddies after we saw his operation, in which case, I'm glad we got out of there before they showed up. I was camping with my girlfriend, at the time, and her sister and sister's boyfriend. We made steak and beans for dinner, and after sleeping until around midnight, yours truly got the bubble guts. So I figured I would hoof it to the outhouses and all would be well. Boy, was I wrong for assuming that taking a dump would be in my cards. A pack of trash pandas was blocking the path, and as soon as I got close enough to see what they were, I heard a chorus of growls. I damn near shit my pants, but I made it back to camp and waited it out until morning. I was approached from behind at 5:30 a.m. still dark. About to board the boat to go across the lake to get my truck when I heard a grunt. I thought it was a bear, so I slowly turned. Keep in mind, this is Buckhorn Lake State Park, in Niseta, Wisconsin, and the cabin I was in was a rental, across from my step-uncle's property. He always said there were monkeys in the forest behind the cabins. Anyway, I slowly turned and this thing I noticed with glowing yellow eyes, then the rest. It was a female. The skin was grayish-yellow and she wore fur around her ankles and wrists. The breasts were hairless and she was around 6'7" and looked to weigh 250 pounds, sort of skinny for as tall as she was. She had markings on her body. She had no clothing on her body anywhere. She had some hair but not what everyone says a Bigfoot has. Well, my stepdad came to the door and saw her with the spear and he had a rifle leaning against the door facing, and he shot in front of her. She slowly turned her head and had a look like bring it when all at once the bushes behind me rattled and I turned, like, now what? Here's Xena, princess warrior from hell. Now what? As I turned to look, the female jumped and I'm talking 12 feet up and 25 feet out and she disappeared in midair, but as she jumped, there was the silver sparkly thing that started flashing like fireflies, but they were silverish white looking. I finally got my sidearm, a 9mm short nose with a sight out and my head started ringing and whatever was in the bush was gone. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. We used go camping all the time with different groups of friends. We had tons of different lakes and places to go. One night, there were 4 of us, 2 guys, 2 girls, all around 19 years old, 2 tents. Where we were, we have been lots of times before as it's a great spot by a lake. That night, just before dark, we all decided to go fishing about a minute or 2 walk from our campsite. We were gone for about an hour, came back and our campsite was completely gone. Everything, tent, coolers, our stuff, everything but what we took fishing with us. There is no possible way a person could have taken it, as where we were, Therese only one way in and out and we were fishing in the entrance. We were about a 10-minute canoe ride back to our vehicles with the spotlights that were still in them, and thank God I still had my keys in my pocket as it had a bottle opener on it, lol. We went back the next day and there was not a sign of any of our stuff, like nothing at all. What's crazy is there was a 40-foot cliff straight behind us and the actual place we were camping was about 300 feet by 300 feet with rocks on both sides. It freaks me out thinking about it to this day, what could have possibly happened to all of it. I would like to tell you about a couple of unusual things that I have encountered. First off, I will tell you I grew up on a small farm and am an avid outdoorsman. My family are hunters and I am familiar with all the local wildlife. I have lived in the area called the Ridge all my life. I'm 43. I am working on becoming a 35er in the Catskills and have done 17 peaks so far. I call the woods my home. My first story happened when I was in my mid-20s. I would take my family camping on vacation in the Catskills in Livingston Manor. On this particular day, I was taking my son fishing to a pond I had found way in the woods. It was about a 2-mile walk up an old logging road that was made at the turn of the century. There was a pond at the top of a series of waterfalls that had an old dam built to control water flow for the old railroad that long had been removed. There was a summer cottage on the pond that I and my son walked to and around to ask for permission to fish. No one was there and it looked like no one had been in a very long time. So I decided to fish from the dam at the edge of the property. We were there all afternoon and fishing was good. It was getting pretty dark when we started hearing noises in the woods across the pond in the direction of the cottage. They sounded like footsteps, heavy ones. They would go and stop sometimes fast and sometimes like they were creeping along. I thought that maybe the cottage owner was coming to chase us out of there, so I shouted, "Hello, who's there?" But got no response. Then there was more noise from the other side now. There was more than one. Now I'm thinking bear? Coyotes? I yelled again, and as I did, a rock hit the ground 20 feet from me. Now I know bears don't throw rocks. Was someone messing with us? Just as I thought that, another rock, a big rock, hit the water. Now I know when I'm not wanted, and quickly gathered my things and my son. I yelled out, "All right, we're leaving," and got the heck out of there. I could hear the footsteps continuing around in our direction around the pond as we headed out. Whatever it was, it stopped when we got 100 yards down the trail. What or who was in the woods back then, I still don't know. We were miles from the nearest road and no one ever answered. Whatever it was didn't want us there. My next story took place when I was hiking with my sister up Wittenberg Mountain on our way to Cornell Mountain. We had made it to the summit of both Wittenberg and Cornell in about 2.5 hours and were on our way back. We made good time up and the trail was clearly marked. I had GPS just in case and recorded my hikes as I went so I could look at average pace, elevation gain, etc. We had seen others on the trail too. Now I can't explain it, but it took us a long time to get down. A really long time. We kept hiking and following the trail for hours, but it just kept going. Both me and my sister couldn't understand it, but what took us 2.5 hours up took 6.5 to get back. It was like we were stuck in a time loop. We checked the GPS and maps and followed trail marks, but it seemed like we weren't getting anywhere. We would comment to each other how long it was taking and what was going on. The GPS kept saying a little farther. By the time we made it out, it had been 10 hours. Time warp? Are fae folk messing with us? Can't say. The GPS showed our average pace on the way back was the same as the ascent and the mileage didn't add up to the time. Just weird. I really think something was going on. My last story happened when I was on my way home from work. I have about a 40-minute drive to work on Route 44 or 55, which takes me over the ridge and to the local town of Newburgh on the Hudson River. On my way home, I was approaching the ridge where 1,200-foot cliffs rise above the Hudson Valley. It was a swamp on both sides of the road. It was dark out and a clear, nice night. Up ahead about 60 feet I saw a figure come out and cross the road. I was traveling about 55 miles an hour. It was a shadow person. My headlights could not light it up even though it was right in front of me. The figure was tall, walking on two legs, if I had to guess taller than 6 feet. My headlights would illuminate the road, everything around it, even the sign past it. But not he figures. It absorbed the light and was just dark. You couldn't see through it, but it was definitely there and turned toward me a little as it crossed from right to left. I slowed when I reached the spot where I saw it, but there was nothing there. It was a swamp on both sides that was sparsely wooded. If something was there, it would have nowhere to hide. I firmly believe I saw a shadow person cross in front of me. Something that walks on two legs and is the size of a big human. I have never seen anything there again. This wasn't camping but at a summer camp. Had someone on multiple occasions peep into a specific cabin counselor's room at around 3 to 4 a.m. It happened about 4 times. On one occasion someone had flashed a light into her room and she ran out and woke me up. I've never been so scared in my life as being awake at 4 a.m. in the pitch black in the middle of the woods. Looking for someone who could be watching me that very moment. After 3 weeks of this happening, someone wrote "kill yourself" on her car and the incident stopped. Still have no idea who it was. Waking up at midnight to the sound of thunder only to check my phone and see that we are under a severe thunderstorm warning with quarter-sized hail and 60 plus miles per hour gusts and to seek shelter immediately. Both of my kids were with me, and there wasn't anywhere for us to find shelter. The first gust literally ripped half the tent stakes out of the ground with all three of us inside. I had to do everything I could to hold the tent down and keep the kids calm while we endured approximately 45 minutes of the worst thunderstorm I've ever been in. It was one of the few times I was legitimately afraid for my life. Do not F with weather. I live in the woods. Back in the 50s, the state had been buying land from farmers. One farmer refused to sell all his land to the state and instead sold parcels along a seasonal road to private entities. In the 1970s, my father purchased a 38-acre parcel from the farmer and built a home. Years later, my parents would buy out another neighbor's home and raise it. Surrounding our now 50-acre parcel is a 900-plus-acre state-owned forest, and surrounding that is another 3,000 acres of national forest. I wanted to paint a picture for when I say I live in the woods, I mean I live in the woods. Bobcats, deer, bears, mountain lions, packs of 15 to 40 coyotes, coy dogs, and even a badger once in a while have I seen while out in my backyard. Now for the strange. I have been witness to a great many events that defy all reason. Once, while in my living room hanging around with friends, a steel water bottle, one of those ones with the twist-off caps, about a liter, jumped 2 feet straight up off the table and came back down, landing in the same ring of condensation it flew up from. We all left the room. Again, with some friends over playing video games in the living room, we are all chatting and the game is loud. An awkward pause as the loading screen music stops suddenly. The game froze. We all fell silent. Behind us, coming from the kitchen, I hear the sink's faucet is on, full bore. No one had been in that part of the house. In fact, you don't have to even go by the kitchen to get to the living room, and due to the wider doorway from the non-kitchen side, most people don't even know that it's back there when they walk through. There's a light fixture in the bathroom that no matter how many times I rewire or fix or replace the fixture, one bulb will always not light up. 3-bulb fixture? The middle one not lighting. 2-bulb fixture? The left one will never light up. I've even run separate circuits from 2 different ends of the house, 2 breaker boxes, and still, any computer, TV, or stereo will randomly switch on or off on their own. Regardless of switch type or power source. This only happens when you are not in direct line of sight to the device. remote controls with batteries out of them, and even sometimes unplugged devices getting split-second moments of power. Some more surroundings. The house is about 200 feet below the peak of the ridgeline of the mountain. The driveway extends east up the hill. We are on the western face. Below us to the NW or W or SW is the majority of the forest. There are state-run hiking trails that actually cross our property due to poor mapping on the state's part. Within a 2-mile hike in three directions, there are hundreds of unmarked graves, old foundations of shine shacks, and smugglers' dens. There are stone staircases in the sides of hills that lead nowhere and come from nothing. I have never for a moment felt threatened or endangered, but I have felt that I was not alone, even if I was. I have hiking stories as well as more creepy supernatural stuff around the house. I'll be happy to share more if there are interested parties. In January 1965, a group of musicians, including Jimi Hendrix, driving back to Manhattan, were stranded in a blizzard and had gotten stuck in a heavy drift that reached the hood of their vehicle. They were on a rural road in central New Jersey. It was bitter cold. Unexpectedly, the road ahead of them suddenly lit up, as a bright phosphorescent object, cone-shaped, like a capsule, landed in the snow about 100 feet up ahead. It stood on a tripod landing gear. Before any of the stunned occupants of the vehicle could move, a door opened on the side of the craft and an entity stepped out. He stood 8 feet tall. His skin was yellowish, and instead of eyes, the creature had slits. His forehead came to a point, and his head ran straight to his chest, leaving the impression that he had no neck. The being proceeded to float to the ground and glided towards the trapped occupants of the van. The snow melted in the wake of the creature. His body seemed to generate tremendous heat, so much so that as it came across a small rise, the snow disappeared around in all directions. In a matter of what seemed like seconds, the being came over to the right-hand side of the van, where Hendrix sat, and looked right through the window. According to other witnesses at the scene, the creature seemed to be communicating telepathically with Hendrix. Immediately, the interior of their vehicle began to heat up. The heat coming from the being evaporated the snow enough to free their imprisoned van. The being glided behind the van and the snowdrift by now had completely vanished. Turning the ignition, the driver gunned the engine and drove away at high speed. As they looked back, they could see the road filling in with snow again. The object was at the same instant lifting off like a rocket from a launching pad. Boyfriend and I planned a 5-day trip in Southern California. We had met each other while through hiking the Appalachian Trail, so we both had plenty of experience. We went to Whole Foods to buy our food for this trip and indulged. For such a short trip, we weren't worried our packs would be too heavy. We wanted to eat nice food. So the second day we hiked to a site that was perhaps 30 meters from a dirt service road. By the road there was a large trough to feed horses. We decided to put our food bags under that, as it was large and heavy, and already overturned. This would keep us safe from bears, and our food safe from animals. We woke up in the morning to go get our food and half of it was gone. I mean, from the two food bags, someone had picked out select foods and taken them. This was not an animal, it was a human. The thing that creeped me out was wondering if this other person had seen us come and place the food there, all while we were thinking we were alone. We were miles from the nearest town, so even though there was a service road, it's not like we were near any civilization. We turned around and went back, as we no longer had enough food for our trip. I grew up down a long dirt road in rural Alabama. My family owns a decent amount of land. I still miss the peacefulness sometimes, but I'm a gamer so I need my high-speed internet. Anyway, the first time my friend and I decided to camp by ourselves, we were about 12 years old, we picked a spot in a field that was right at the edge of the woods. We really weren't that far from the house. Maybe 500 to 600 yards. far enough to make us feel like we were being brave but close enough to haul us back to the house if needed. Everything was going fine. We had a tiny fire and plenty of junk food to gorge ourselves with. It was probably around 10 or 11 that things took a turn for the worse. We were both just sitting and staring at the flames. There wasn't much noise that night because it was early winter and the bugs had pretty much vacated by that time, so all we heard was the crackling of the fire and the occasional wind gust blowing what few dead leaves might have remained on the trees. That's when we heard it. I couldn't say exactly how far away the sound was, but it came from the woods. It was a blood-curdling scream. To this day, I've never heard anything in the wild that would make you as uneasy as that sound. We both looked at each other, and I know that we were thinking run to the house. But we were tough kids, right? So we decided we'd lock ourselves in our tent and brave this new danger we'd discovered. Neither of us had any clue what that noise was, but we knew we weren't setting a foot outside the tent until the sun came up. My friend ended up actually falling asleep an hour or so later. I didn't have an easy time though. I could see the dying light of the fire glimmering through the tent fabric. I just laid there watching the light dance until something disturbed it. It was like the fire went out completely, but then it came back and I immediately realized something had walked.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Between the fire and the tent, I covered my head with my sleeping bag. Scared to death. I never heard a sound. No footsteps. Nothing ever messed with the food we left outside. 30 minutes later, I had to uncover my head because I was pouring sweat and about to suffocate myself. I could still see a tiny glow from what was left of the fire. I couldn't see or hear anything else. I laid there for probably another hour before I finally fell asleep. I woke to sunlight. My friend was already up and outside. We talked about the scream and I told him what I'd seen after he fell asleep. We looked around and could see no tracks or any other signs that something else had been here besides us. I went on a camping retreat with a group of friends when I was just out of high school. We stayed at a campground that was made up of lots of cabins that had those metal bunk beds and a large main cabin with a kitchen and socializing area. It was the first night up there, and I wanted to take a walk around the wood near the campgrounds. I walked along some trails until I could no longer see the lights from the cabins and it was practically pitch black. After a little while, my night vision kicked in and I continued my exploratory hike. After about 15 minutes of walking in the dark, I could see a shape ahead of me in the path. I stopped and tried to make out what was there. About 100 feet ahead of me was some small guy or kid standing in the middle of the path. He was standing completely still, and it appeared he was standing in the middle of a bridge that the path led to. I stayed really quiet and started backing away while keeping my eye on him. It was way too dark for me to make out any details about him from where I was. All I could really see was that he was standing completely still. My nerve finally broke and I hurried back to the campground. When I got back, I told my friends about what I just saw, and of course, a bunch of them wanted to head out to check out what I found. So, a bunch of us group up and I lead them back to the bridge where I saw the guy standing. As we got closer to the spot, I could see that he was still standing in the same spot. We all kind of stopped and waited, We started whispering to one another about what we should do now. Some wanted to turn back around, and others want me to go over to him to see if he was okay. Being stupid, I agreed. I went ahead of the group and inched my way towards the figure. I was ready to bolt the moment something seemed wrong. So I got close, and when I got to the head of the bridge, I could see what the shape actually was. It was an upright vacuum. Someone had stuck an upright vacuum in the middle of a hiking path for some reason. I guess seeing something so foreign to the surroundings, along with it being complete black and white dark, made our imaginations go a bit wonky. Overall, this was pretty mundane, but the whole experience has stuck with me now for decades. My friends and I used to go to the local park to swim in the creek late at night. The park was pretty heavily wooded with lots of hiking trails, and the creek was in one of these wooded areas. We set out for the park around midnight. It was a clear night and the moon was full. This will be relevant later. As soon as we arrived, things felt off and we were all on edge, but we wouldn't voice that until later. As my friends Daniel, Aiden and I entered the woods, things only felt more off. It was oddly quiet. Normally there was the sound of insects, frogs, and other nighttime critters. But that night it was completely silent. It was also dark, abnormally dark. Yeah, it was past midnight, but like I'd said, it was a clear night with a full moon. I'd been there many times, and had never struggled to see. When we arrived at the creek, Aiden hopped right in and Daniel and I stayed along the bank. My guard was up at this point, and I didn't want to be in the water. Not long after this is when things started getting weird. We all froze as there was a loud groaning sound. It's hard to describe. It was like metallic grinding that came from the sky. I suggested that maybe it was just a car crash or a train, then joined A in the water, but stayed where it was shallow. Then we heard the sound a second time, but louder and more spread out to where it no longer came from any discernible direction. I hopped out of the water at this point and Daniel and I began questioning if we should leave, while Aiden insisted we should stay. Well, then we heard it a third time, louder again, and it was as if the earth was groaning. At that point Aiden flew out of the water and we all ran back to the car. It was like the get the F out instinct hit us all at once. As we all stood in the parking lot drying off, I spotted a figure in the creek at the edge of the tree line. It was solid white and humanoid. It didn't have a face but darkened areas where facial features would be. It was pipedal but its movements were jerky and unnatural. It was too tall to be an owl, too small to be an adult human. It actually looked a lot like the Fresno crawler. I don't think it was that emo, that video is fake. But that is the closest visual I can give. I pointed a finger to the figure and asked my friends if they saw it. They did, and right as we all looked at it, it froze and looked back at us. Without a word, we all piled into the car, and Danielle whipped the car around, illuminating the tree light, but the figure was gone. On the drive back, we all talked about how we'd all felt on edge as soon as we'd arrived and how we all thought it was too dark or quiet. Back at our dorm, we went out for a smoke to ease our nerves and spotted a helicopter headed towards the park. It wasn't the usual hospital or police helicopter. It seemed to be military. Coincidence? Probably, but in the moment it didn't help our nerves. I know why sailors are superstitious. I used to not understand what that old cliche was about. Now I do. The yacht belonged to my friend, David. He made good money in finance over the last few years. Not exactly a fortune, but a decent amount. Enough money to buy a yacht decent. It was a nice boat, big enough for multiple people to sleep on, but small enough to be operated by a single person. After some subtle hinting, he invited me for a trip out on the water, somewhere quiet, he said, where not a lot of other ships went. No competition for fish, he said. You'll like it. I wasn't actually interested in fishing. I just wanted a trip on a yacht. On the first evening of our voyage, David went downstairs to prepare the fish he had caught, leaving me at the controls on the bridge, or whatever it's called. The sun was sinking into the ocean, and I was starting to feel just a bit nervous about spending my first night at sea. The water was calm and strangely soothing in the daylight, but as night fell I started to wonder how deep it was. While I was sitting there, thinking about the increasingly inky depths below my feet, the radio crackled. I looked down at it, startled. I hadn't even noticed it was there. I was wondering whether to call for David when a strange, distorted woman's voice came from the speaker. "Attention. The RV Sunrise has not returned to port. Attention. No sighting in the first perimeter. Attention." My reaction, deer in headlights. Was this a distress signal? Was I supposed to say something? Were we going to have to go rescue the crew of a sinking ship? "Hello?" I said cautiously, leaning down to what I thought was a microphone. "Attention. Terminal depth is increasing rapidly. Attention. Sonar has detected movement within the perimeter. The RV Sunrise has not returned to port. Attention." Like I said, I don't know much about ships, but this didn't sound like a normal distress call to me. I couldn't figure out whether it was an actual person speaking, or a recorded message. David suddenly came flying up the steps and switched the radio off, looking extremely flustered. I asked him whether that was a good idea, what if someone was in trouble? But he just muttered that it was fine, and not to worry about it. I asked him what the message had been about, but he dodged the question and told me that the fish was ready. He didn't speak much during dinner, and he kept glancing out at the black water. It was a cloudy night, and you couldn't even see the waves beyond the yacht's lights. I got the feeling that David wanted to turn around and sail home, but I guess he didn't want to disappoint me by cutting the trip short. Or maybe he was just reluctant to sail in the dark. We went to bed in the yacht's narrow bunks with a feeling of unease. A noise woke me up some time during the night. I lay there for a second, disoriented. Then I heard it again, a crackle of static, coming from above, where the bridge was. I looked across at David's bunk. He was fast asleep. A light on the radio was blinking, and there were muffled, crackling noises coming over the line, as though someone was transmitting dead air. I looked over my shoulder to make sure David was still downstairs, then leaned down and said cautiously, "Hello?" A man's voice answered immediately. "This is the RV Sunrise, transmitting from out beyond the, There was a pause, like the speaker was checking something. "I think we're well past the fourth perimeter, maybe even into the fifth, if you can believe it, Control. The voice was garbled and heavily distorted. I had a lot of trouble making out what it was saying. I had no idea how to reply to this. "This is the Aurora, it's a yacht. Do you need help? Are you in trouble?" I think that's what I said. "Control, you've got a real situation brewing out here. Our sonar is going crazy with movement. Seems like at least a dozen signatures below us, all the way down to terminal depth, and they're big. You've got to contain this." I obviously had no idea what any of this meant. "Sorry, this isn't, Control. This is just a yacht, the Aurora. Do you need help? Do you want us to call? That's a proximity warning. I think we're in trouble. We will keep transmitting as long as we're able. Sunrise out for now." I realized that the man couldn't hear me. Either that, or this was a pre-recorded message, like with the earlier transmission. I couldn't tell. I just stared at the radio after it went silent, perplexed. What was all this about perimeters and sonar? Then the radio emitted an ear-splitting, electronic shriek. I yelled in surprise and fell over backwards. A few seconds later, David came running up the stairs, disheveled and slightly panicked. "What's wrong?" he said. "I heard you yelling, what happened?" I pointed to the radio. As if on cue, the robotic woman's voice came back, "The RV Sunrise has not returned to port. Attention. No sightings in the first perimeter." This seemed to shock David to his core. He actually held onto the back of the chair for support, as though his knees were about to buckle. As you can imagine, at this point I was about ready for an explanation. Thankfully, I didn't have to force one out of him. He seemed deflated and weak, as though he had just suffered an enormous fright, and he told me what he knew. There was a reason why this part of the ocean was so deserted. Ships avoided it, because strange things were known to happen out here. Mysterious lights, phantom vessels that vanished as abruptly as they appeared, and odd, eerie radio broadcasts whose source no one could ever locate. The fishing is really good out here, he said, leaning hunched against the wall and rocking back and forth slightly. But this place isn't normal. Ships go missing sometimes. Or they come back after weeks, but the crew think they've only been gone for a few days. Or people see things in the water. He clamped his mouth shut and was silent for a moment. He looked up at me guiltily. I mean, that's what the stories say. I've been out here a dozen times and nothing like that has ever happened before, I swear. David was always prone to panic, whereas I tend to be the pragmatic one. Well, nothing bad has happened yet. Those radio messages are creepy, but they're not hurting us. Let's just get out of here and go home. He clapped me on the shoulder, looking very serious. I shouldn't have brought you out here. I'll get us back safely, I promise. I didn't answer. I had just seen something over his shoulder, lights, flashing on the horizon, like ships signaling with Morse code. They flickered for a few seconds, then stopped. I decided not to tell him about it. He was rattled enough already, and he was the only one who could operate the ship. I waited downstairs while David got us underway, trying to keep my nerves under control. I could almost feel the dark, deep water below me. I told myself that when we got home, I was never setting foot on a ship again. And I tried to make sense of the strange radio messages. Were they a secret government operation? Some kind of experiment? A code? Or just a prank? The engine suddenly went quiet. The yacht came to a stop, as quickly as a yacht can. Then David screamed. It was my turn to sprint up the stairs. I found him sagging against the wall, staring out the window in horror, and went to see what had scared him so badly. There was another ship outside, next to ours. Like, right next to it, so close that I'm still amazed we didn't hit it, looming out of the dark like deep sea creature. In case you never noticed, the ocean is very large. We had seen other ships when we were setting off, but always from a great distance. Finding this one so close was like waking up to a stranger standing next to your bed. It's not working, David said, fiddling desperately with the controls. Indicator lights flickered on and off. Something's wrong, nothing's working. It's that ship, it wants to keep us here. He was losing it. I calmed him down, and did the only thing I could think of. I volunteered to go onto the ship. I could literally reach out and touch the bow. That's how close it was to us, and I managed to rig up something with a rope that let me climb aboard. Why? Why did I decide to board a creepy, apparently abandoned ghost ship that somehow materialized out of thin air? Mainly because I was hoping there was someone on board who could help us. But I was also willing to consider that David was right, that the ship was somehow keeping us from leaving. The ship seemed to be dead in the water. The controls at the bridge were unresponsive, and all the lights were off. Luckily, I thought to bring a torch. I stood on the deck, wondering what to do next, and heard a low electrical hum below my feet. Creeping along in the dark, narrow corridors of the interior was not a fun experience, as I'm sure you can imagine. My flashlight beam picked out clothes hanging up and personal objects left around. There was no sign of commotion or any sort of disturbance. When I called out into the darkness, no one replied. I did find the ship's name, stamped on a bulkhead, RV Sunrise. The hum was coming from the ship's engine room, where I found a massive array of complicated-looking equipment that evidently had its own power source. I don't have the faintest idea what any of it did, but there was a large and prominent switch in the side of what looked like a control box, so I did what anyone would do in that situation. I turned it off. As soon as the loud hum stopped, I heard a whispering voice, coming from deeper in the engine room. I nearly had a heart attack, but it turned out to be a small radio, which I hadn't heard previously due to the sound the equipment was making. The voice coming from it was so quiet that I almost had to press my ear to the speaker to understand it. Everything is gone. The oceans are empty. There is no dry land anymore. Nothing is moving. The oceans are empty. We sail and sail, and there is no land. The oceans are empty. The sea floor has vanished. The oceans are empty. The oceans are empty. The oceans are empty. I got the hell out of there as fast as I could. And arrived at the ship's bow just in time to see the yacht depart at top speed. I stood there and watched it vanish into the distance, certain that this was some kind of hallucination, certain that I couldn't really be seeing what I was seeing. David was standing at the controls. I yelled his name until I was hoarse, but he never turned around. The lifeboats now seemed to be my only option. I didn't want to spend another second on that dark ship, with that eerie, whispering voice in its bowels, and I was willing to risk a voyage in an open lifeboat to get away. I probably would have swam, given the choice. I clambered into the nearest boat, then realized I had no idea how to lower it into the water, and that even if I could, I had no way of moving it on my own. Just as I was truly beginning to despair, something moved in the water below me. A burst of cold salt water sprayed over me, and there was a massive bang from the ship. Something attaching the lifeboat to the ship snapped, and it plunged down into the water, coming terrifyingly close to capsizing, flinging me against the side of the boat. When I picked myself up and looked around, the RV Sunrise was already slipping beneath the waves. It wasn't sinking, it was being dragged under. I saw a vast, roiling shape below the water's surface, something with skin as pale as milk. The turbulence from the Sunrise's descent pushed the lifeboat away, and I huddled in its center and watched as the ship vanished. It was over in less than a minute, and then I was alone. I drifted for 7 hours before I was rescued. It was pitch black, so dark that I couldn't see where the lifeboat ended and the sea began. I listened to the water slapping against the boat's hull, waiting for something to grab me and drag me under, remembering the eerie voice I had heard on the Sunrise, "There is no dry land. We just sail and sail. The oceans are empty." I heard things, while I was drifting in the dark. I heard the rhythmic splash of someone swimming next to my lifeboat. I heard a sudden burst of static, coming seemingly from the water itself, followed by a high-pitched, distorted voice, "Depth, 100 meters. Depth, 200 meters. Depth, 300 meters. Which slowly sank into the sea. I saw things, too. Things I won't describe. I huddled against the side of the boat, and ignored all of it. They were lures, put out by the ocean to trap me, just like the Sunrise had been, the way anglerfish ensnare smaller prey. When morning came, I was spotted by another yacht. I discovered that I was nowhere near where we had set out, or anywhere I could have conceivably drifted. The crew, three middle-aged guys out on a fishing trip, asked me if I wanted to see a real good fishing spot nearby, celebrate my rescue with a nice fresh-caught meal. I told them to turn around and sail back to land immediately. They saw the look in my eyes, and did as I asked. David's yacht was found drifting, almost 200 miles from our approximate last location. There was no one on board and no clue as to what happened to him. After 3 days, the search and rescue operation was called off. They did find one thing on board. The local newspaper had a field day with it, calling it the modern Mary Celeste. Everything on the yacht was neat and tidy, except for two oddities. The radio had been smashed, and there was a single note written in a journal next to the ship's controls, by an unsteady hand, "The RV Sunrise has not returned to port." My grandfather has a story that goes like this. Back in the 80s, he and his brother John were setting up to go fishing out in the boondocks. It was early morning, about 6:30 or so, and they were draining their coffee thermos on the bank of the pond. It was a new fishing spot for them to explore. At the time, they were living in East Texas, with humid breezes and mosquito bites that boiled in the heat. The sun was just beginning to break over the stretch of the trees as they pushed their rowboat into the water. My grandfather, we call him James, turned to John to remark on the brilliant yellow of the sunrise. "It was blinding," he said. When he tells this story to our grandkids, he cannot stress this point enough. The sky was barely pink from the dawn, but the sun itself was shining like the quarter of an eclipse. John looked up, noticing the anomaly mere seconds before. James shielded his eyes and fumbled for the sunglasses clipped around his shirt collar. He started to tell John that they should leave, that he had a bad feeling about being there when the wind began to wail and the dirt picked up around them. John shouted to James, the words lost in the disturbed darkness. My grandfather tells us it was about this time he reckoned they should get going. He and John abandoned their poles and boat and scrambled to their truck. He figured they would be back for them later. Amid all the ruckus, John ran that poor Chevy C or K over a tree trunk, steering them into a tree a little off the trail. The truck was totaled. At the hospital, when the nurse asked how fast they were going, John offered 35, maybe 40 miles per hour. He had been pinned between the seat and steering wheel, sustaining a few bruised ribs but otherwise relatively unharmed. James had gone through the windshield. Victims of head-on collisions usually suffer crush injuries and severe internal trauma, including but not limited to lower body fractures, traumatic brain injuries, flail chest, abdominal, and upper body impact injuries. Even at low speeds, James' accident should have been fatal. However, my grandfather arrived at the hospital with minor cuts and bruises. He had a concussion the doctors wanted to keep an eye on, but other than that, both brothers were fine. Neither was able to say how long they were unconscious waiting for help to arrive because neither remembered anything after the accident or the next few days. They were, in short, miracles. Survivors of the impossible, or at least highly unlikely. My grandmother said the most alarming thing she experienced when visiting my grandfather in the hospital was his sudden ability to speak other languages. She said as she sat by his bedside table, he would switch tongues amid their conversation, then not remember a thing he had said. My sweet Nan accused John and him of drinking. The doctors assured her that amnesia and a little confusion were common in trauma victims, especially ones who were unable to mentally process the events that had transpired. The accident had shaken their brains, that's all, a nurse told her. Nan insisted, though. You have to understand. My grandfather is a pure-blooded American redneck, a high school dropout. While he means well, he couldn't remember a lick of any foreign language while he was in school, let alone during his recovery. Nan investigated for herself. She cornered John in his rest bed. He wasn't any help. He had been unable to sleep, replaying the moment of the crash over and over again in his head until the memory stressed his conscience, and he was admitted for psychiatric observation. Nan maintains to this day wasn't the sight of her husband stumbling over his sentences, bleeding from the stitches on his forehead. No, instead the memory that haunts her is John bolting upright every time he closes his eyes, screaming that it was too bright to see. My grandfather and John don't like to talk about what happened that day. They will talk about the pond, the sight of what they like to believe was a UFO, and the terror of realizing they were about to crash in the middle of the woods where no one was likely to find them. They won't talk about the experiences that came after, how they were found, or what happened between the moment of impact and their release from the hospital. What my grandfather will say, if prompted, is that he holds one proud scar from that crash. He'll point to the folds in his forehead that collapse around the raised skin, and he'll tell you, that's where they probed me. I'm from Australia. I'm 22 years old. The reason I decided to release this encounter is because I have done countless amounts of research on the internet trying to find what I think I saw when I think I was 9. Pretty sure I was 9. I think I may have seen an alien. I thought it was a ghost or something, but the more I think about it, the more it was likely to be an alien. So I was lying in my bed in this house, which at the time was our holiday house, but we're now living in it permanently. So I was lying in bed. My sister was lying on the other side of the bedroom, sleeping. I woke up in the middle of the night to a humming like that kind of thing. I woke up and thought it was my sister, and then I started feeling scared, like, I was just scared. I hadn't seen anything, I could just hear this humming and, I don't know, maybe it was 10 minutes of this. I was so hot and sweaty because I was so scared, I was paralyzed, I couldn't move. I wanted to turn around to see if anybody was there. Anyway, after an amount of time, I got up whatever it was, the strength and, I don't know, the courage to turn around and I saw this thing standing at the end of my bed. I only looked at it so quickly that I turned my head back straight away and it was kind of like this hand-drawn sketch. This shape, this area, yeah, and it was brown. It was like going like this, looking around, seeing this, and turning around and falling back to sleep somehow. I can't remember what happened after that. Maybe waking up an hour later. There's nothing there. I ran to my sister's bed, like, I didn't even touch the ground, jumped into her bed, and slept in her bed for the rest of the night. It's what kids do. I woke up the next morning, told her and she freaked out. I hadn't seen anything like that since. So basically I had never seen anything like that before. Swear to God I definitely saw it. The main thing I looked for the next day was if there was a coat hanger on my door because I have always called it the hammerhead, because you can see why and there wasn't like a jacket or anything hanging up on the wardrobe so it wasn't that. I mean, maybe it was my imagination, I don't know but whatever it was there or not, it was there in my head. It was an image that my mind processed whether real or not, so if anybody else has seen this before, please come forward. It's going to confuse me for the rest of my life because I don't know whether I believe in that stuff. I guess there have been so many people who have had stories of seeing aliens, ghosts, there's been so many, to not believe that perhaps 1% of that was real and if 1% is real then they exist and that's all you need. It's not possible that for every single one of those people who have claimed to have seen something unexplainable, it's impossible for that to not be real. I want to start this off by saying I am a very, very skeptical person. I don't go searching to experience things, or looking for things. I also don't go around telling these stories, because they literally sound crazy. I still cannot comprehend it myself. But with having a burner account on Reddit, sometimes I want to get things off my chest. This might be deleted, soon. I have had very strange unexplainable encounters all my life. I want to tell whoever reads this, one experience that has stuck with me. It started with just random dreams when I was 17 years old. I would have odd dreams of this unknown man, whose physical appearance had great detail that is burned in my mind. I thought it was just my imagination, until it became repetitive and started to scare me. The dream would always be the same, he would abduct me, take me to his place, and then just stare at me as if I was an alien. As if I was this strange thing, he had happened to come across. I ignored it, because they were just dreams. Then the dreams became extremely vivid. Then the dreams would start to turn into what felt like memories. Of this man, visiting me. A man with a strange, very unique appearance. I do not know, nor have I ever seen him anywhere in my life. Never. One day, of recent, I had woken up to a man. I was in a very dazed sleep state. This man says something along the lines of, "Aren't you happy to see me?" Me, being in this sleep state, I am confused but I can't fully wake up. I start to have a panic attack. He comes closer, and I realize this is the man I have had burned in my mind. And he kneels down by me. He is on a brown-looking space suit with an orange bright patch on the left side from what I can remember. He seemed to notice I was panicking and he just kneels there with sympathy. That's the last thing I remember before I woke up with that memory. I spent the whole day afterward in fear. Fear. Pure fear. That is all I have to say for now. But it gives me anxiety even just typing this. Also, if I was an artist I would be able to easily draw him. I have never seen a man that looks like him. He doesn't even look human, at all. Edit, details about his appearance, large oval eyes, something is off about his eyes. Dark brown skin. Sometimes he is on a space suit. One very vivid dream he had on a black space suit with a black helmet. He has long braided hair, almost looks like locks. He is tall. Any more questions about his appearance, ask. I will tell.